This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the restrictive voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good evening, Matthew. Restrictive, go on, why?
Yes, so you were a goalkeeper back in the day, of course, and when you were a goalkeeper, you faced many a penalty in your career. You saved some, you conceded some, yet season by season over those years, further restrictions seem to be placed upon you and other goalkeepers when attempting to save what can only be described as a free shot from 12 yards, making it very difficult for you to save that free shot from 12 yards. And just when you thought all the restrictions that could have possibly been placed on goalkeepers to save free shots from 12 yards, in the past week, IFAB, in all their wisdom, have decided to just add further restrictions upon the restrictions upon the restrictions for goalkeepers when saving free shots from 12 yards in a move that some might describe as, you know, the game has gone.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Might as well just give the goal. Why don't we just say if there's a foul in the area, let's just give the goal. Because honestly, I thought, for, you know, all the conversations we've had about how ridiculous penalties are now, I just assumed at some point they would change the rules to make it just a little bit more difficult for the attacking players taking the penalties. But no, they've made it even more difficult for the goalkeeper who has to stay on their line while the striker dances around, does whatever they want, little cartwheel, pauses, waits. Oh, and by the way, if there's an encroachment, of course, it'll be retaken. If the goalkeeper is a centimetre off their line, it'll be retaken. They've now made it even harder.
They absolutely have, yes. And these new restrictions, so let's have a look at them, shall we? So from July the 1st, they come in. They couldn't even wait until the beginning of the new season. They were like, right, as soon as those contracts are up, boom, July the 1st is when these restrictions are coming in. So IFAB rule changes have prevented goalkeepers from taunting during penalties. This means goalkeepers cannot touch goalposts and nets. They cannot delay the execution of a penalty. They must not unfairly distract the taker, which you'd have to say is down to the discretion of the referee. Some might deem the goalkeeper unfairly distracting the taker in a certain way, whereas others might think, well, do you know what? That's fair enough. And lastly, behaviours that fail to show respect. Let's flip that on the other side, shall we? And deem a hop, skip and a jump as maybe a little bit of a lack of respect. Maybe walking towards the ball and taking an age to take your penalty as a little bit of a lack of respect. Anyway, I can't help think that this is a fallout from the World Cup, and namely Emi Martinez, who was lauded pretty much everywhere for the tactics that he used to distract the penalty takers that he faced en route to winning a World Cup for Argentina. So it just seems crazy because, yes, it was a certain type of housery, and yes, that was remarked every time he was involved in a penalty shootout, but we saw it in the Copa America, it went viral. We've seen it again in the World Cup, yes, went viral, but yes, was heavily lauded for what he did, was praised for the tactics that he used. And of attackers who have so much of an advantage, as we've said, with a free shot from 12 yards, aren't able to score past what is now a hapless goalkeeper, then crikey, I don't know what we can do. But yeah, these restrictions have come in and now it's very, very difficult for goalkeepers.
Unbelievable. I mean, you can also, it's optional if you want to applaud when they score. That's also, you know, you can do that if you want. If you want to wear a blindfold, that will also get you extra points if you wear a blindfold. And if you face the other way, that again will be really well received by the rule mate. Look, for me, it's just a joke. It's so easy now to get a penalty with VAR and with the way in which players know how to buy a penalty. So it's so easy to get a penalty and the reward is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't know. For me, and it's so simple, if you're an outfield player, just look at what Ivan Toney does. Copy his technique and there will never, ever be a save penalty ever again. And then we can just scrap penalties, just make it a goal.
There are two other points that I'd like to make here. One, the fact that Emi Martinez is a character, and we don't want to lose characters in the game. And the type of antics that he was producing during those penalty shootouts were a talking point, were entertainment, and that is ultimately why we're here. Yes, it's a results-driven business. Yes, you want to win trophies, but you also want your characters in the game. And all this is doing is further stamping out any type of personality that a player, that a footballer, not just a goalkeeper, might have. And secondly, the delaying the execution of a penalty, That, again, is something that is not solely down to goalkeepers. If anything, it's geared more towards outfielders, because we now see, don't we, this ridiculous playground nonsense of as soon as a penalty is awarded, players, defensive and attacking, surrounding the penalty spot. You've got attackers trying to get the defenders from not scuffing up the penalty spot. It's absolutely ridiculous and should be stamped out because it's petty, it's petulant, it's pig ignorant. But ordinarily, it isn't the goalkeeper doing that. Yes, sometimes the goalkeeper might jabber in the opposition taker's ear, but that's about as much as a goalkeeper might do to delay the execution of a penalty. Yes, he or she might veer from their line for a bit and take a swig of water, but it's not really the worst thing that a goalkeeper could do, especially with all these restrictions placed upon them now when they're told by the referee you must not move from your line moments before they're trying to focus and save a penalty. So yes, it's normally the outfielders that do that, but oh no, we mustn't punish them.
Well, this is it. I mean, the amount of penalties we've seen that we spoke about on this show where they're doing all sorts in the build-up and the jumping and the delaying. And of course, then where a goalkeeper has to stay on their line, it's almost impossible to time the kick. You know, as a goalkeeper, you're taught you've got three decisions, left, right, or stay central. You know, and you have to then time your dive because, again, any player worth their salt, they should hit the corner from 12 yards. So for any goalkeeper to have a chance, you're going to have to go a little bit early while staying on your line, if you can, of course. You have to go a little bit early. This is where, look, and I know I mention this every single time we talk about penalties. That's why I just think the whole idea of penalty is flawed. And my solution will come in one day because it has to change. It has to be something that is black and white. Again, this hasn't made it more black and white. This has just made the success rate from going from, what, 9 out of 10 to 9.7 out of 10, whatever it will now be. So it's just really, really poor. Really poor. I can't understand what they're seeing. Like you say, 100% it will be on the back of the World Cup. And we gave Amy Martinez a lot of love because I think that when it comes to a penalty against you, again, 12 yards, free strike at goal, the goalkeeper's already massively restricted as it is. You've got to use everything in your armory in order to get the better, whether that's mentally, whatever you can possibly do to get a slight edge, which Emi Martinez did and was successful in doing so. But as you say, you take that out now, all of a sudden a goalkeeper stood there having to be very quiet on their line, not being able to move. Obviously, all the rules that are still in place, a striker can do whatever they want to do in the build-up. And I go back to the Ivan Toney technique, and I've said this for a long time because I always remember Heide Helgeson did a very similar technique against me at Watford when we were together, and I never ever saved one of his penalties. Even though I saved a good number in my career, never once did I save a Heide Helgeson penalty. In the same way that I'd be very surprised if Ivan Toney misses a penalty ever again, because I think if you're good enough in that you can watch the goalkeeper, you can walk up to the ball and you can see their movement and put it the other way, or if they don't move, you've got the ability from 12 yards to put it close enough to the corner, you will score every single time. So if anything, now that these rules have been brought in, it just brings that into play even more, that I'm saying to every outfield player, if you want to score every single penalty, just do what they do. That's how you take a penalty. Don't do the, you know, so many that will just aim for a corner and hit it really hard. No, that's not the technique. That then relies a bit on luck, relies on the goalkeeper not guessing where you're going. Just do what Ivan Toney does and you will score every single penalty.
Okay. Well, I feel like we've riled you up at the beginning of this show. Like it a lot, mate. Got you in the mood for goalkeeping analysis.
Well, maybe not. I'm not too sure. No, it did really, when I saw it, I thought it was a joke, and then I saw it wasn't April 1st, was it, that it came out? It was a couple of days before. So, yeah, I was frustrated by that. I thought it was an April Fool's, but no, it wasn't. So, yeah, come on, let's go.
So we are going to start as per in the Premier League, but we should note that this will be a slightly different beginning. Bit of a twist to this one because we're recording this, as you said at the top of the podcast, good evening. It is indeed Sunday evening and not Monday or Tuesday morning when we normally record, because I got the call today from you, Richard, an emergency SOS in the fact that you are jumping on a plane shortly, and said that we needed to get a podcast out ASAP because you weren't going to be available to record. So I chucked my podcast cape on, I've managed to put it together, and here we are. But as a result of the planning, I've not been able to see the two games on Sunday. So West Ham United versus Southampton and Newcastle United versus Manchester United. So this is all you, Richard. You've been sat in front of the TV taking notes. So yes, take it away. Actually, do you know what? In fact, this is almost like a GKPI. Mm-hmm. So we might even have the music. Let's have the music, shall we? Please, Richard, take it away.
I actually was flicking between three games because, of course, Bolton played Plymouth
of course.
In the EFL final as well. So I was having a little look at that as well. So, no, firstly, look, West Ham game, watched the majority of this. And, yeah, quick shout-out to Fabianski. Made some big saves. One in particular, do you know what's funny? The last few days, the amount of conversations I've had with clubs when they talk about how many points does a goalkeeper win us each season, which I think is an odd metric because, again, we spoke about this. You never know when a save is going to win your team 3 points and when it might mean nothing. But this was one of those moments where down to his left, really, really sharp save from Fab. Excellent save, to be fair, down to his left. And obviously them running out 1-0 victors. I felt like we need to give him a bit of love. And then, of course, I say the big game of the day, I guess it was, and one that I was really intrigued by, Newcastle, Man United, and thought we were going to be talking a lot about the goalkeepers, but Nick Pope had very, very little to do. In fact, just one pickup, which he did comfortably. David De Gea, on the other hand, I thought played very well, despite the 2-0 defeat, no chance on the two goals. Made a very good double save. The second save, it was that classic one where the commentator saying doesn't know anything about it, which to an extent he didn't, but the first save was very good. A classic reaction save from De Gea. He was down on the floor. What he did do, which was good, just made himself that little bit bigger while he was on the floor, and the follow-up then hit him pretty much firmly in the chest from memory. And then he made a really, really good save. It was one of those where crosses come in and you would ask whether he could come and claim the cross. I think he was impeded a little bit, so couldn't. And actually did like a 360, which you wouldn't ordinarily see, but did it very well to get himself into position. And the reactions were just ridiculous to get fingertips onto the bar. How he's from 3 yards managed to get fingertips onto the bar. Very, very good. But as I say, Nick Pope barely tested. De Gea, good on the day, but United weren't so good.
And the EFL Trophy final. While we're on it, we should mention it. Bolton running riot at Wembley against Plymouth. So we should mention James Trafford on loan at Bolton from Manchester City. He's been mentioned many times in this podcast this season. Don't know whether it would have been his first visit to Wembley, certainly in senior football. So congratulations to him on a first senior medal. And Callum Burton too, unfortunately not getting the win, but indeed playing a big part in ensuring Plymouth reached the final in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Bolton were utterly dominant. Again, I was flicking between the games, so I wasn't able to watch the whole game. And again, it was quite a quiet game on the whole for James Trafford. Looked very, very comfortable in what he did. The goals, I saw 3 of the 4 that did go in, and certainly no chance for Callum Burton. Plymouth were at 6 of the 7s on the day itself. But no, Bolton, and certainly for James Trafford, like you say, to give him a bit of a mention, because quite some season for him. You know, he rolled back a year where he'd been at Accrington, kind of been in and out a little bit. But ever since he's gone to Bolton, certainly back end of last season and pretty much this whole season, he's been very, very good and looked really comfortable out there. Again, without really being tested in the part of the game that I saw, but just looked really comfortable. And for a young goalkeeper, like you say, making their first big appearance at Wembley in a game like that, just looked really controlled. And in the end, another clean sheet.
Over to Stamford Bridge, where it was Chelsea 0, Aston Villa 2. And quite the performance from Emi Martinez. But by the way, you're going away, right? So you're going away in, what, 2 hours? You're boarding a flight.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Right, okay, we'll whiz through this then, shall we? So Emi Martinez has now a very good performance from him to keep the clean sheet, which made it 34 clean sheets in 100 Premier League outings. That is the most number of clean sheets in an Aston Villa goalkeeper's first 100 Premier League outings. It's amazing, isn't it, how you have to figure out these stats based on the Premier League and not what happened before. But yes, very well done to Emi Martinez.
Very good. Yeah, look, you know, you talk about 1 in 3. That's kind of deemed, again, how much control a goalkeeper has over a clean sheet, we could question. But no, look, he's made a huge difference to them. We spoke about him so often on this pod. And again, he was very, very good. I mean, in terms of balance of play on another day, this could have been a very different scoreline. Couple of big saves. One in particular, I thought he did very well, where he's gone to play the short pass. And this was one of them. We've seen this so often when they play it into the sitting midfielder and the sitting midfielder then isn't able to release it to the fullback, gets nicked. They come in 1-on-1. Of course, if that goes in, people are then questioning Emi Martinez, even though it's the way in which goalkeepers are told to play and looking to play. It wasn't necessarily a bad pass into the sitting midfielder, but I thought he recovered really well, out very quickly, aggressive, very Martinez, I'd say. And then the save down to his right, in particular, just wanted to highlight that. Just really sharp save going in the bottom corner. Again, we talk about his power so often, but you know, the speed at which he's able to get down and get a good hand to it. And it's just that big character. Going back to what we're talking about at the start of the show, you know, which is now unfortunately going to be taken away when it comes to penalty situations. But I think that's such a big part of his game, just being such a big character, which is exactly what you need in the big games.
Can you name the two goalkeepers that he usurped?
And this is Premier League goalkeepers.
Mm-hmm. So the most clean sheets in the first 100 Premier League appearances for an Aston Villa goalkeeper.
Mm. Mark Bosnich.
Is one who was on 33, equal with a guy that's referenced a lot on this podcast.
Is he now? Mm.
Because you played with him.
Okay, that's a big, big clue.
It's massive.
And that must mean Brad Friedel.
Brad Friedel, yes. Or Friedel, according to Mark Bosnich. So it was a really good video that Aston Villa put up of Friedel and Bosnich basically congratulating Emmy on his success, which they then showed to him after the game. The two others in that list, so there's one with 32 and one with 20. Who are they?
Oh, you're testing me now. This is Premier League era.
Premier League era. One's Danish and one's from the US. There you go.
Sorensen and US would be... Okay, I can tell it's late on a Sunday night. Guzan, there we go.
Guzan, the penny dropped. Isn't it funny when that happens, when you know exactly who it is, but the name's at the back of your head and you're just waiting for it to come down to the front? I could see the cogs turning there.
Got there in the end, though.
Over to the Amex, Brighton 3, Brentford 3. And would someone please sound that klaxon? Yes, Mr. Jason Steele, take a bow. A lovely ball over the top for Kaoru Mitoma to equalise for Brighton, making it one apiece. Not just a punt this, not just a kick. A lovely ball over the top. And he's keeping Robert Sanchez out of the side and really coming into his own.
Yeah, it is indeed. And it was a really, really good pass. It was really quick thinking. You could see he's seen that opportunity. So he's taken the touch. He could see that opportunity. And the execution is just perfect. I mean, defensively, I don't know what Brentford were doing at the time. I mean, it's a gaping hole in the middle of the pitch. But he's seen that. The weight of the pass is perfect. And it's one of them. Of course, he isn't necessarily in full control of this. But the way in which it's then bounced up for the attacker to then put it over David Raya into the empty goal. It was just the perfect pass. Big well done to him. He's certainly going from strength to strength.
And finally, in the Premier League, Manchester City 4, Liverpool 1. And I'm indebted to James Loder on Twitter for this, who said, please tell me someone has just seen Rio Ferdinand blame Alisson for Kevin De Bruyne's goal on BT Sport. Laughable. Stick to being a defender, Rio. I then, as a result, managed to get the BT Sport coverage up and could not believe what I was hearing from Mr. Ferdinand. Wow. This is one of these.
Commentary corner.
Yeah, it has to be a commentary corner because this is just insanity. This is a classic case of being damned if you do and damned if you don't, because if Alisson does what Rio Ferdinand wanted him to do and then the ball gets whipped in on that front post, he's chastised for being too far advanced.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. He was essentially saying, you know, if Alisson had stood 9 yards out, he could have cut out the cross. It's like, come on. Somebody please call him out. He's talking right now. This is your opportunity. Someone in the studio. Look, just quickly, you can butt in now. You can save him the embarrassment. No, they didn't. They let him continue to talk. Yeah, you see, look, he's in a really good position. Yeah, of course he is, Rio, because they're about 40 yards from goal. That's why he's in the perfect position right now. Now they're only 18 yards from goal. No, he's not going to be stood 9 yards out. He's going to drop to where the most effective position is for that particular moment. Then they get their little arrows up on the screen. Oh, if he was just here. Yeah, like you said, if he was just here and they roll it in that near post, then what do you say? It's just, yeah, again, really, really frustrating. We say it all the time, but this doesn't even need a goalkeeper to sit on the panel. No. It just needs someone with a little bit of football intelligence just to be like, Rio, it's a different phase of play now. Like, it's a different situation. Of course, the goalkeeper can't stand 7 yards out. Come on, you know this. You know this.
It is the EFL overview and into the Championship to begin with, where we must give a big shout out to Anthony Patterson for being the first goalkeeper to keep a clean sheet at Turf Moor this season. The last man to do so was Edison on the 2nd of April 2022, so almost a year to the day. Sunderland holding leaders Burnley to a goalless draw, and Thomas Fashlik continuing to keep Huddersfield in the hunt for safety. Actually, a pretty vital stop in a 4-2 rout of Middlesbrough. Hawkeye doing a job to confirm on this one. Daniel Backman playing well for Watford, but Watford generally not playing well. Luton, however, and Ethan Horvath, on the other hand, very much in the ascendancy. It's nice to see the US international, just like it was nice to see Andrew Fisher as well, up for the back in the win for Swansea at Cardiff for those celebrations at the end. Recovery from Ruddy, Birmingham beating Blackburn with their stopper doing well to react quickly in injury time after spilling a Lewis Travis shot. Josh Griffiths marching on for West Brom, a late save from Tom Bradshaw's header as the Baggies Millwall shared a point. And Victor Johansson yet again showing us what he's made of. Hull and Rotherham also goalless thanks to the Millers stopper spreading to thwart Ryan Longman one-on-one. And Blackpool's Chris Maxwell conceding three against rivals Preston, the first two of which were dubiously analysed to say the least. Keith Andrews and Sean St. Ledger, a newbie, watching this one in the Sky Sports studio.
Right, where do I start? Well, let's start on a positive, shall we? Yeah, like I say, Josh Griffiths certainly building his reputation, and good save down to his right. Positioning was very good for this. Just thought that it's one of those that you can quite easily get sucked across. Ball whipped in, took up a really good position to make a good save down at his near. John Ruddy, as you mentioned, excellent recovery. Might have felt we could have done a little bit more with the first one, maybe held the first one, but the speed at which he was able to get out and showed the bravery to make that big save, and it was a huge save with them picking up the points. Dan Backman, this was certainly one of the top saves of the weekend. As you say, going back to what we said earlier about how many points you can win your team, well, certainly I don't think it would have mattered how many saves that Dan Backman made in this one. Luton by far the dominant team, but a really, really good reaction, one-handed save. The Victor Johansson save was arguably one of my favourite of the weekend. I just thought the speed and the bravery that he came off his line, and I spoke about this a lot recently, like, where you see those one-on-one situations where goalkeepers don't necessarily fully commit and they'll come out and maybe like look to do the long barrier where they can. But I love to see this when someone just comes out and flies at the attacker in the way that he did, and it makes it so, so difficult to get past him. Thomas Vashlik, as you mentioned, has been very good since he stepped in for Huddersfield. A couple of big saves in this one. Brave save first half. Ball squared across the box, came out very bravely to make a big save. And then certainly the one that was on the goal line, bit of a scramble, but the speed at which he was able to turn around, managed to get his hands on it. And as you say, when they did the Hawkeye, you could see that the ball certainly hadn't crossed the line. And in the end, a very important save. Massive win that for Huddersfield. And yeah, I felt for Maxwell. You know, you look at both of these goals, certainly the one that's fired across him far corner, absolutely nothing that he could have done with that one. And if anything, there was a shout for potential offside because he's having to look round the player as well. So he couldn't get full sight of the ball and it's hammered into the corner. So no chance there. And I know that then the footwork was questioned for the free kick. Now, I don't think the footwork was any issue here. You know, it's been whipped in. The only question might be the positioning of the wall. But even the positioning of the wall, I think in terms of how you'd normally do it, you have one man extra on the outside to cover for the ball being whipped in. You actually look at the amount of whip the lad gets from the free kick. It's a brilliant, brilliant free kick. Like, it's gone outside of the wall and whipped all the way back in. He probably would have needed two men outside of the wall, which of course you just don't do ordinarily. You know, you wouldn't expect a free kick of this quality. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with the footwork. He still gets across very quickly and gets down to the bottom corner, but it was just a really, really good execution. So again, I think to place any blame at his door is a little bit harsh.
In League One, there are two topics in particular to touch upon. Christian Walton now with 8 clean sheets in succession, a 2-0 win over Derby for Ipswich, and David Stockdale back in for Sheffield Wednesday, just 2 games after that long unbeaten run. Cameron Dawson back on the bench.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with what's happened there. I just think that, and again, I make this point a lot, but you look at teams that, you know, win leagues and gain promotions and what have you, very rarely do you see goalkeepers kind of in and out for small details. And I felt that even Stockdale initially, you know, started the season so well. I think he was leading the league or certainly top 2 or 3 for clean sheets and was playing very well, and then came out for Cam Dawson in the first place. And as you say, Sheffield Wednesday gone on this unbelievable run. He's been very, very good. And again, it seems like such a small detail that he's come back out the team for. And then it's always difficult. I find when a goalkeeper steps in, it's very rare that you're able to just hit the ground running because, of course, it's probably different to other positions in that so much of it is just getting used to the speed of the game, is once again playing in front of a crowd, etc., etc. And I find that it is different to what outfield players have to deal with because, yeah, a striker comes on, even if they're not completely match sharp, they'll be able to get themselves into the game that bit quicker. You know, they might get that chance. They might score a goal. They might do whatever. For a goalkeeper, you're stepping in after so long for not playing to then be expected to be playing as you were before you came out the team. I think it's a very difficult transition. So I don't really understand the strategy behind this. And I think it's been maybe a little bit more difficult for David Stockdale to step back in. Not that he's necessarily done anything majorly wrong. I know he got a little bit of stick for the goal that he conceded. Certainly the first goal where he's gone down to his left-hand side, wasn't able to hold it. Similarly, the second goal wasn't able to hold it. But then again, I just think it takes a number of games for a goalkeeper to then really get themselves back into their stride. So I find this a strange decision from the manager, quite tough on both goalkeepers, because again, you're also then playing with the mindset of one mistake and I'm out, which that can never be healthy. You know, I go back to my point that I think the best teams, the goalkeepers know they've got a certain amount of credit in the bank. And at some point, of course, if you have a number of games where you're making errors and you're not on form, then you expect to come out. But once you get that situation where you almost feel like every mistake and you're going to be taken out of the team, you're not playing with freedom. You're playing with fear and with the avoidance of fear, which I just can't ever see being positive for a goalkeeper.
I was flabbergasted, actually, when I saw this, so much so. And look, there could be more at play here that I don't know about, and that's fair enough. But when you consider how good Cameron Dawson has been since he's actually come into the side, and the plaudits that he's received and the performances that he's made on the big stage as well, the games against Newcastle. And yes, it's just one game, but it's a big game because it's live on TV and everybody's watching it, and you're playing against top level opposition. And yes, they lost two games after that long unbeaten run, but the second of those away at Forest Green, also televised on Sky, he was pretty good in that, made a fantastic save in the second half. So this just seems so knee-jerk to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And then I go back to my point, a goalkeeper then stepping in. Because you've also got that, there's like a bit of a mentality side of things as well to this, where if a goalkeeper steps in, and I know goalkeepers listening in, they'll probably appreciate what I mean by this, where, I don't know, if you're stepping in for a goalkeeper who's had a really tough time, five or six games in a row, it's just not quite working out, and you step in, you are stepping in on the front foot because you know that, okay, maybe it's time for a change, and you know that you can then bring some positive energy, etc., etc. Whereas, and again, I can talk from experience, it's one of the hardest things stepping in for a goalkeeper who's done very well, because suddenly the expectation and the feeling about it is that little bit different from the fans, the fellow players, etc., etc. So I just think when, I don't know, if you're a manager, I still believe that it's very different to other positions, in that if you've got a number one and a number two, and I think most clubs should have that, you know, the whole idea of two number ones, I do question, because I go back to the point, I think sort of flip-flopping in and out, I don't think does anyone any good. But I think the idea of having your number one, having belief in that number one, and giving them a decent amount of credit so they can fully express themselves and really relax into the position and bring out the best in them, ordinarily, and again, history states this to be true, will bring out the best in a goalkeeper. So, yeah, look, I would certainly question the decision. And now, you know, it's been a really interesting run of games where they were had that incredible unbeaten run. They've now struggled a little bit the last few games. And you do wonder whether decisions like this might play a part in it.
And finally, in League Two, Thomas Holy, very nearly the hero for Carlisle in a promotion battle at Brisbane Road. They were done by a horrid deflection with Leighton Orient taking the points. Grimsby's Max Crocombe creatively saving with his feet, and then pretty much everything else in a goalmouth scramble akin to the one we saw with Vasilic earlier. Bradford, however, nicking a 3-2 win in that one. Not nicking a win was Swindon, who at 1-0 up were denied a second thanks to a save of the weekend contender from Jakub Stolarczyk. He's on loan at Hartlepool from Leicester, and he then watched on as his point turner helped Pools turn the tables to fight back and win 3-1. And rivaling that contender was Kieran O'Hara with a brilliant close-range tip away from Newport's Mickey Dimitriou, a point meaning Colchester just keep their heads above that drop zone. And 1 point above them are Harrogate, who could have bagged all three at Tranmere had it not been for a fine double save from Matthias Hevelt. Kazim Olegbe and Jack Muldoon denied there, as were a host of Doncaster players when coming up against James Beadle, back from international duty and bagging a clean sheet and a handy triumph for Crewe.
Well, yeah, I'll start with James Beadle because I actually watched this game, and certainly his reputation is just getting bigger and bigger. Looks so calm when he plays. A few big saves in this, certainly a big one just before half time that could have made it a very different game going into the second half. Then a couple of big saves second half, reaction save to his left, came for a good punch, then made a big save on the back of that as well. Distribution was good all afternoon as well. I think if he can carry on in this vein of form, then certainly it's going to be a positive end of the season for Crewe, and could be quite an exciting summer for James himself as well. And you mentioned a couple couple of other saves there. Stolarczyk, for me, arguably the save of the weekend. In fact, that and Lee Berge, really impressed with Lee Berge's save. Good punch, recovered well. And again, the reactions he showed to get a flick over the bar, I thought was very, very good. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, it's really hotting up. We're getting towards the final furlong. It's time for this. In the Premier League, Emi Martinez, 4 from 5. Lucas Fabianski, Happy Hammer, Nick Pope leading the Prem Pack. Into the Championship, Aaron Muric, 4 in his opening 18, 11 in his next 18. Anthony Patterson, bookending Edison. Ethan Horvath, feeling higher than the Highlands. John Ruddy, back-to-back. Jack Bonham, unbeaten return. Carl Darlow, easy tiger. Victor Johansson, last 3, 0-0. Wes Fodringham, last 4, 1-0. Josh Griffiths, championship quality. George Long, mil... Ben Amos, big blank. Into League One, Harry Isted, realigning the matrix. Ashley Maynard-Brewer, Aussie. Luke Southwood, 4-6. Craig McGillivray, top jock. Christian Walton, unprecedented waters. Will Norris, hat-trick. Simon Eastwood, off the mark in 2023. Will Mannion, filling in admirably. Matt Macy, 50-50. And into League Two, Rich O'Donnell, glimmer of hope. Kieran O'Hara, doing a job serve. Joe Day, cup of. James Beadle, railway man. Lawrence Figaro, let's see that table.
Very good, Richard. Very good. So you said, let's see that table, and we shall see that table, because Lawrence Figaro is still top of that table with a clean sheet at the weekend, moving him up to 21 clean sheets in 38 games. Behind him, with 18 apiece, both in 38 games, are James Trafford and Christian Walton. And then behind them, with 17 in 36, is Ben Wilson. And 17 in 38 is Ethan Horvath. I think that's his first appearance in the top echelons of the Clean Sheet Club. So he's moving right on up too.
Could you imagine if he nicks it at the death? I mean, there's not many weeks to go now. So it's quite a good cushion that Lawrence Figaro has. But, I mean, it can change very, very quickly.
Quite staggeringly, not in that leaderboard now, is Freddie Woodman.
Yeah, true. He had, I mean, this is, I mean, we're going to talk as if they're horses now, but he really did get off to a flyer, didn't he? And then Lawrence Figaro's just been steady away the whole time, just keeps racking him up. You've then got Christian Walton, who was a little bit further back in the pack and is just making an absolute charge for it.
Good stuff, Richard. Okay, we did say this was going to be quick. You've got to jump in a taxi to get on a flight. Where are you going?
So this time it is America, Madrid, Belgium, England.
Wow. For all goalkeeping-related activity, I presume.
All goalkeeping-related activity, and then back to Dubai.
Before we go, we should just mention Alan McGregor hit 500 Rangers appearances at the weekend. So big congratulations to him.
That is phenomenal. That really is. I mean, again, any goalkeeper listening in, I think I mentioned this a few times. I think I was 199 was my number of appearances. So, yeah, it's hit 500.
For all your clubs. Yeah. That's 500 for one club that he's made. And I was, bear in mind, he's had appearances for other clubs too.
Yeah, that's it. Really rub it in. Yeah, cheers. 199 in total. And he's at 500 for one club. So just unbelievable, ridiculous. And to still be going at the level that he is and playing as well as he is at his age as well is just... yeah, phenomenal to keep your body. Well, certainly, again, goalkeepers listening in, you know, the amount of injuries you pick up playing in goal. Again, throwing your body to the ground hundreds of times a day for 25, 30 years, whatever it's been since he was a kid, you know, to still be doing it at the level he is just extraordinary.
Okay, Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.